The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these, but did you know that U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut, but if you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on Sirius XM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to Busted Open's The Masters Class. This is where our Hall of Fame staff takes you, the Busted Open Nation, to school. You can only get the Masters Class exclusively on the Busted Open Podcast. Don't forget, you can listen to Busted Open live for 3 hours, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on Sirius XM Channel 156, Sirius XM Fight Nation. But the Masters Class, you only get right here on the Busted Open Podcast. And this week, we have a very special episode. Myself and Hall of Famer Mark Henry talk to one of the true Masters of the Ring. Probably maybe one of the smartest men in the history of pro wrestling. William Regal joins us for this special episode of the Masters Class. The legendary William Regal. Oh. Sir, how are you this morning?
Oh, goodness gracious me. Legendary. I wouldn't go that far. No.
Oh, stop it. Take your flowers. Take your flowers while you're above ground.
No, that's I'm English. So
we had... Mr. Regal, you and Dave LeGreca suffer from the same thing.
Oh, is
that is not being able it's a good thing though. It's humbleness. It's being respectful to not pat yourself on the back so much. But both you guys need to accept the pats on the back every now and then. You do a great job. You've mentored me and hundreds of other guys, probably thousands, that wouldn't have the life that they have without some of that tutelage. We had a good conversation the other day, and I came away from that conversation going, there needs to be more men like William Regal in the business because you're a straight shooter. If I'm not doing something, you're going to tell me, Mark, that was the shits. You need to do better. And there's nothing wrong with that.
A lot more
I can take it.
You
would say it a lot more polite and respectfully.
Yes, I would. Yeah.
But
yes.
I'm just saying that there's nothing wrong with criticism. And you give criticism better and in a like Dusty Rhodes. You and Dusty were the two most creative way, you mentally were able to get into guys' heads and go, hey, if you change this and you do this, like, I can't make you do it, but if you do it on your own, this would be the end result greatness. Like,
so the people who did that for me were, as I consider, the greatest wrestlers of all time, because I grew up watching British wrestling. And I didn't see American wrestling until 2 years after I was already a wrestler. That's hard for anybody to understand now because you can see everything. But all I grew up with was watching for 33 years. There was wrestling at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon on ITV in Britain. And I grew up watching that. And then every 2 weeks, I went to the local city and watched wrestling. And in the summer times, wherever we went on like day trips or vacations, my father took me to see wrestling. So once I got in the wrestling game, I went through, starting when I went through in Blackpool at the fairground and stuff. And then by the time I was 17, I got introduced to a fellow called Marty Jones, who was without doubt one of the pioneers of modern day wrestling. Him and a guy called Mark Rocco, who was later to be Black Tiger in Japan. And it, so that started there. As soon as I'd gone through training, getting retrained by Marty when I was 17, by the time I was 18, having his sort of name on with me, that I'd stuck it out with him, because he was trained by Billy Robinson from when he was six, right? He was very much put through the ringer. And so that led to Fit Finlay and a guy called Pete Roberts and Terry Rudge and Dave Taylor and this incredible array of people that gave to me and taught me, sometimes just life lessons, sometimes hard lessons. But I was around and wrestled the best people you could possibly wrestle from being 18 onwards. Then I sort of grew to be, you know, I went, when I was 17, I was wrestling full time. I went from being 5'11" and 170 pounds to being 6'3" and 170 pounds in 6 months. Wow. And so I was all like arms and legs, but I grew to be tall and become a heavyweight. And by the time I was 20, Dave Taylor, you know, well, and then Terry Rudge and Pete Roberts and Tony Sinclair and all these people that were great British heavyweights. And then people like Fit and all these people, they put me into going all over the world. So from 20 to 24, I went everywhere because they went everywhere. They used to take those kind of fellas to other countries to give the job credibility. So if you put those kind of solid British heavyweights on, which Billy Robinson sort of came to America and brought that and made it popular, that kind of style, you had to be able to do that. But without all those fellas helping me, I wouldn't be here today. There's a lot of people. I could go on and on. We haven't got time for that now. There's many, many people that helped me in that, you know, first part of my career. And I've just naturally like that anyway, but I've always felt if I don't do that, and I won't force it on anybody, I'm not going to go up and, you know, if they want to ask me, yeah, I don't think I'm doing my job right. It's not about getting anything out of it. And you know, Mark, I don't want thanks for anything. I've never asked anybody. I walk away if you try and thank me. I get embarrassed. It's just the way I am. I don't need thanks for anything. But And people think that I do a certain style. No, I grew up doing all kinds of different stuff. I really wanted to be, when I was sort of 17, I wanted to be like a hard-hitting, what is called cruiserweight now, because that's what Marty Jones and Mark Rocco and early Fit Finlay were. They were like, you know, they weren't heavyweights. They, you know, they grew different, like Marty and Fit grew to be bigger guys, but they weren't at first. And they used to go, well, I just didn't have the skill set for that. I just didn't have the athletic ability. But luckily, I grew to 6'3" and I got bigger, and I was a mad conditioning freak. So I trained and did all the squats and the push-ups and whatever. I got to where I could do that. I sort of worked like those, like more like a, there was a thing we used to have. Terry Rudge taught me this. All wrestlers should wrestle like a big cat. Right. And there was strict weight classes in Europe. There was lightweights, and for every weight class, there was a British championship, European championship, world championship. So there was lightweights, middleweights, heavy middleweights, heavyweights. And he said that lightweights should wrestle like a cheetah, middleweights should wrestle like a panther, heavy middleweights should wrestle like a tiger, and heavyweights should wrestle like a lion. And if you think of the way we move as wrestlers, it is like a big cat. We stalk things, we swat at things, we drag things. It really gives you a different outlook on how to do this. So I tried to be more like a tiger cross lion, because that's all I could do. I couldn't quite go the full Tiger route of doing all the hard hitting cruiserweight. So I just couldn't do it because I couldn't do, you know, I just wasn't that kind of, I haven't got that build.
Nimble.
But I'm not nimble at all. But, you know, I can, without these fellas giving me all this information, I wouldn't have got here. Once I got to America when I was 24, everybody, what you saw was nearly 10 years of me going through, I'm working ridiculous amounts of times then. We talk about working, you know, like several times a day in the summer seasons in England, because they used to always have afternoon shows and night shows. So I used to do 20-week summer seasons like that when I was 16 and 17 and 18. And then again, it just work, you know, 200.
So you had a lot of reps.
A lot of reps. I was away from England in 1992 for 9 months. Wow. it's just constant work. And then worked in England for 3 months, like seven nights. Well, I wouldn't say seven, but between five and seven nights a week. So it was just reps, but also reps against the best people that not only Europeans, but because there was such a thriving scene there, Japanese guys and people from all over the world, really, all sort of came to Europe. So I have that, and I don't feel right because I wouldn't be here without them, without giving back. And that's been my whole thing. Again, I won't ever go up to anybody and say, look, let's backtrack. The last 10 years, that's been my job. You know, there's so much I can do. But the one thing I would do is every time you came to the curtain, because that was what I was told to do, if you were in NXT, I'm the person telling you, maybe you want to work on your pins. You know, yes, that was a great match, but maybe you want to work on your pins. Maybe you want to work on, you know, your strikes. And so that was a job then, but I'd still do it very politely. If that's not my job, I'm still going to do that anyway if you come to me and ask me for any advice. Plus, I'll give you 10 years worth, at a minimum, save 10 years of your career by telling you not what to do. Just don't do a load of the things that I've done and made mistakes so I can catch you up. So you can save 10 years of my 30-year wrestling career by just asking me not what to do. I can quickly fill you in. And it's whether you want to listen or not.
Wow.
But then if you want to really stick around, you've got to put up with me, like, showing you why you do this, why you do that. You know, at the end of the day, wrestling can be all kinds of different styles, but you've got to remember, and this is, again, only my opinion, you are portraying a trained professional fighter with instincts. Doesn't matter what style you do. That's what professional wrestlers are. And if you go in with that mindset and then add your skill set, it can add to that. Right, if that makes any sense. Doesn't matter if you're doing comedy wrestling, doesn't matter what style of wrestling, it's just that you still should go in there with the mindset of being a trained professional fighter with instinct. And that's what I do, is detail. So that's what I like to do. So it's a long answer to a question, but yes. So and I can talk for days. Another thing I can do, and this is the one thing I say about myself, and you know this, Mark, I can read people quicker than they wish they could. It's just one of my skills, right? So I can look in your eyes and I can be explained, because I've seen so much. And it's not about me. It's about me just seeing all these great people or traveling around the world, seeing it done differently and whatever, and living through all these experiences. And every show I've ever been on, I've watched all the matches and stuff. I can see in your eyes when I'm talking to you whether you are going to, whatever way I'm trying to explain something, whether it's clicking with you. And I never try to say anything to anybody unless I have at least five different ways of putting it to them and five different ways that I've seen it done. So, because not everybody retains information the same way. So if I see them and I'm looking in their eyes and they go, that's not clicking with them. Okay. And then I'll give them another example from, oh, I saw this fella do this or this lady do this when I was there. And all of a sudden you see the sparks going off, right? And they're okay. So we get the same message, but that's what I have a strict rule about that. I will never say anything to anybody if I don't have five different ways that I've seen it done. So we get there eventually. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
It makes perfect sense.
And Mark, you know, because I've obviously, sir, this is the first time that we've met or ever spoken, and I obviously know your reputation of being a teacher and being a mentor. Your explanation, now I understand why. Because it takes a great teacher and a great mentor to know and to look into somebody's eyes and see that something's not clicking and it's not getting through. And then finding another way, another path to get that message across. And it seems like that's definitely
it takes
a gift.
Time, though. That's the thing that with Daniel Bryan and people who have been around me, that's the thing, though. I'm not a good start from scratch trainer. My brain is going at a million miles an hour when it comes to wrestling. And so there'll be somebody after me. Hang on.
That's okay.
How dare you call when I'm trying to make a call? Oh, dear me. Anyway, my brain's going at a million miles an hour. So people need to be really at least somewhat trained before I start talking to them, because it's over their heads. You can't blame anybody.
They won't get it.
For being, where they are, right? And I'm not I'm left-handed, and I don't know my left from my rights. So I'm not good at explaining. I can show you how to do things well and whatever else, but I'm not very good at. I need people who are at a certain level, and then I can start upping the game a little bit. If you're willing to sit and listen to all this stuff that just comes out of me, because wherever I start, and you know this, Mark, we'll go around the houses or around the mountains about it'll trigger something else up and something else. But we eventually, if you've got the time, we'll get back to that point and probably learn another 50 lessons in that conversation. But I can't do that to a huge group of people. That's some people have great skills of that, of communicating with great, you know, people, the job I've just come from. I can only connect with about, out of 100 people that were there, I can connect with probably about 12 to 20 of them.
Well, two of the guys.
That takes time. Yeah, and that takes time, right?
Yeah, and two of the guys that have definitely clicked for it would be Moxley and Bryan Danielson that you're working with now in AEW.
I think so, yeah. I'd like to think that, yes, because Bryan especially, because he came 22 years ago now. In fact, just last month, March, will be 22 years.
Wow.
He came, when I came back to the WWE in 2000, for the first 6 months, I was in Memphis at the developmental system. And I wasn't supposed to be the trainer, but the trainer just wasn't turning up. And I like to train. And I was just trying to get myself back up to scratch, because I'd been obviously documented me being off the rails for about 18 months before that. And they turned up in my life. It was a group of guys that had just come from Shawn Michaels' school, and Bryan being one of them. And I saw him have a match with Brian Kendrick on the first night that I met them. And I'm like, wow, these fellas have, because they were the guys that were, they'd been trained by at Shawn's school, but they also had this education of watching Japanese wrestling, and they're just doing this stuff, and they're wrestling like, there's a term like that. Sometimes I think that's missing a bit nowadays. They were wrestling like they were hungry. Wow. And I know the difference. And they were wrestling, it was all coming from here, right? All coming from there, because they were trying to prove something. And then they wanted to, they sort of never, we were never apart for the next 5 months. We used to do 10 days on, 3 days off there. So I'd be there for 10 days, come up. Well, we had nothing else to do except for do wrestling for 10 days. And I didn't, because I was trying to, they helped me and there's a myth about me and I trained Bryan. No, I didn't train Bryan. I was fortunate enough to meet Bryan and to train with him. That's a big difference. I didn't train Bryan. Bryan was already good. We just, he picked my brain because he liked the British stuff. I introduced him to, because he introduced me to watching certain types of Japanese stuff, because I was always a New Japan guy. I wrestled for New Japan. So he introduced me to watching Old Japan. And because he had tapes, and then I got some tapes sent over from England of old British stuff, and we watched that. And then he just, well, show me more of that. Well, stuff that I knew, and a lot of it I didn't do anymore because I wasn't on with the kind of people that did that in America. So it just all grew. And then through my relationship with him and with Bryan Kendrick, a lot of the younger guys realized the word got out. Basically, they won a match that they had started Ring of Honor. And so my word got out that if any of them came into contact with me, I'm an open book. If, as long as you want to work hard, I will help you. And you don't, you know, but it's like, it wasn't just about me. It was about, I loved it because they're giving me ideas and I'm seeing them do stuff. No, I've never seen that. Or so it was just a constant thing of that, of growing. And people don't realize how much of that I had to do with at that time. But all of those, not all of them, but there's a lot of those early guys used to send me their stuff from Ring of Honor and their different independent stuff. And they'd send it. Brian didn't, because it's too cheap to send the postage, you know. Everybody else, you know.
That's a,
like this he's the person who gets the, like me and him get connected, but he never sent me anything because it's too cheap. But everybody else did, and his stuff was on it. So I was getting all those DVDs, and like, and then that led. At the same time, in March of 2000, I met Samoa Joe, I met John Cena, I met that because they sent me from Memphis to, they sent me to UPW in to do a 3-day seminar, and again I got to meet a new group, and Chris Daniels was there, and Frankie Kazarian, and people. So I had connections with all these people from 2000 onwards.
William Regal, thank you so much for appearing on the Masters Class this week. We have to get you on again. This has been simply phenomenal. Mark, you always say about giving the flowers, and definitely have to give flowers to William Regal for the time he spent with us on the Masters Class today. We got to get him back on again. Thank you to William Regal. Thanks to you, the Busted Open Nation. Of course, don't forget to subscribe and comment and rate the Masters Class, the Busted Open Podcast, and if you feel like it, and we would really love if you did, listen to our daily show for 3 hours live Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern time on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156. Don't forget also to get our shirts, our hoodies, our hats. Go to podswag.com/BustedOpen for all Busted Open merchandise for myself, for Mark Henry, and William Regal. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week on Busted Open's The Masters Class. Busted Open is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. The producer is Gabby Laspisa. The associate producer is Andre Viola. Sound design by Mary Bailon. Special thanks to SiriusXM Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, the legendary Steve Cohen. And SiriusXM Fight Nation Program Director, Mother Marissa, Marissa Rivas.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.